You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
I like that every time it gets me. What do you got for us today, Dev?
Companies provide a structure that allows for a variety of individuals to pool their efforts and accomplish huge tasks that could not be done alone. No job is ever done alone. Someone else will always play a role. Now, the no job is ever never done alone is obviously not totally true, but in the context, I'm gonna switch up the order of things. I know you don't like when I do this, but my recommendation for this week is a book called Ask Iwata. It's the I think Satoru Iwata. It was one of Nintendo's longest running CEOs.
Ah, okay.
He passed away in 2015, I think. So a bunch of his coworkers put together this book of all his teachings and his thoughts on business in general. But then he goes into some, you know, about how he started making video games and blah 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 and becoming a programmer. But he's got all this great kind of business stuff. And the part of the quote, which was so simple, but it's one of those things that until you say it out loud, you almost take it for granted. But when someone says it out loud, you're like, oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
A company provides structure that allows for individuals to pool their efforts to accomplish huge tasks that could not be done alone. All right. That's the whole point of a company, I guess. But it's kind of such a cool thing. You usually don't think of that, but without the big company, a lot of these things could not be made.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, people talk about you get an idea and you try to start something. You want to be an entrepreneur. You want to start a business. You can only go so far when you're working alone. When you're working, I mean, you only have so much time in the day, right? So it's like you can't make everything and ship everything and send it and advertise and do everything on your own. You need to start, you need to expand. And the only way you can do it all is to have people with you that can help you and they can specialize in those different things. Right. And obviously you could do it all on your own, but you wouldn't have enough time to make it worth your time, right? To make enough or sell enough or do enough unless you're like, I don't know. You know, unless you get past the point where then you can do something and sell what you're making for such a large amount of money that it makes up the time, like artists and stuff, you know, painters and sculptors and whatever.
Yeah. Or you're a hobbyist that just whatever money you make is like your side cash.
Right. Exactly.
Like, like, hey, hun, I make these things on my free time and I sell some of them. And, you know, that gives me whatever, a couple $100 a month to spend on whatever I want.
Right. Yeah, and that could get you along if, you know, probably couldn't get you along if that's your only income, not in our world, you know, not in like our society where you have to make money to live. Everything is so expensive that you have to have loans and you have to have mortgages and car payments and insurance, and you just can't make enough money by just getting by and just doing what you can. You have to be able to expand to make enough, which, you know, is it's not ideal, but it is what it is, right? It's the world we live in. You know, there's no reason to like fight it. And I do see that, like, actually just thinking like about him, how crazy would that like arc be of his business, you know, in his perspective, watching it, like, I don't know, was he
Iwata.
From, like, was he there all the way from the beginning?
He started, Nintendo was formed before he was involved with it, or the Famicom system, I think it was called in Japan. But he was a kid who his father helped him buy a calculator, but a calculator that you could program on.
Right. Nice.
So he learned to program in, I think it was the, when did Famicom come? When in, like, mid 80s?
Yeah, I was going to say probably 80s.
So I think he learned in the late 70s when you could get a handheld calculator and things like that. Real early on. But so he was making little games, and then he, and that was for, I think that was actually, was it? It might be like Texas Instruments or something. He had whatever it was anyway.
Right.
So he was making these games, and then he,
Like Centipede or whatever that was. You know?
Well, stuff like that. And then
right.
he started hanging out at, like he said, like the first personal computer store in like Japan or wherever he was, you know?
Yeah.
But everyone would hang out and code together because half the people didn't have enough money to have a PC anyway, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So, but he learned and he started making games, and then he sent one to Nintendo because he saw the future of how cheap the Nintendo was and how expensive a PC was. Right.
Yeah.
So he was like, I got to get involved. And he sent a fully done game, and they were amazed right away. Like, who's this kid who sent in a fully finished game? I think he equates it to like if someone sent, you know, oh, at the time, it was like a brand new Wii game, fully done,
right,
to Nintendo, and saying, like, one kid said, oh, here you go. I know you all have been working on this stuff, but here, I did one on my own. So they hired him, and him and his, like, they had a small business. They made, like, some of the original, like, golf for Nintendo.
Right. Yeah, right.
And, like, those original one-word titles. Yeah. You know, like, this is baseball. This is, like, you know,
right.
It didn't need any, like, you know, Tiger Woods 05 or whatever.
Right, yeah. The categories were like, they were one for each category. Dragons.
Yeah. Dragons. Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy. Just imagine, like, just his perspective, though. He couldn't have been that old. I mean, he was relatively,
I think he was in his 50s or 60s.
Right. So just imagine, like, the arc of his like, tenure there with Nintendo and what he saw, where he went from and where he left.
Right.
Like, how crazy is that jump over, you know, like, 40 years? It's, like, insane. And just that. I mean, I'm actually, I thought often that I'm really happy to be alive in this time, to be kind of bridging that gap between super, super simple technology to this insanity of advanced technology that we have now, and just being able to see that. And like, not that I'm like, darn these kids these days, they shouldn't have technology, but I'm just really happy that I was able to live through that, you know, and live in a time when I didn't have it, and then have it and what I have now, and really see the difference and see the benefits of what can be done now with the technology we have, which is just, you know, phenomenal. It's just amazing. You know, it's like the, I don't know, what's, like, I almost feel like what's like Quantum Leap, right? You know, in the show Quantum Leap, there was the main guy and then, like, his like, robot, you know, iPhone dude, you know, who would, like, pop up and tell him stuff. He'd be like, bloop, bloop, like, yeah, right. You're here now. And it's like, that's what Siri is like, that guy from Quantum Leap, that, like, like, you know, the, like, dude on his shoulder, you know, like, it's crazy. Has all the information you need right there in the palm of your hand.
Right. But yeah, it's really good. And he's got such I don't know why we always come back to it, but you have sometimes these original guys who have a passion for it. That guy, Iwata loved making games. He started out as a programmer and then obviously moved on from there. switched over to hardware and figuring out how to make things like the Nintendo DS and the Wii and stuff.
Right.
And become a CEO. But just the love for the business and what happens when that person disappears.
Right.
Like, can you continue to have that love for it? Because everyone that comes after, they probably love it too, but you know, Nintendo's different, right? Everyone has nostalgia for Nintendo. But if you have a tiling company or a carpet company,
right? Yeah,
there, no one's going to have nostalgia for Bob's, you know, tile warehouse. Mm-hmm. And then after the original guy stops and he doesn't have quality anymore, they're going to move on and just be like, whatever, we're going to cut some prices and quality.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It reminds me, I was actually watching a video today with my students on traditional Korean kimchi pots, like clay pots. Mm-hmm. And it was just a documentary on this one guy who was a traditional clay pot maker, and he's like in his 40s. and he was, you know, comes from a tradition of, you know, men in his family who did the same thing. And there's definitely much more, sincerity and genuine interest in following along the tradition of your family in the, Japan, China, Korea,
right.
You know, those kind of Asian countries. It's something in their kind of cultural identity and also mm-hmm. their personal identity that, like, it draws them to that. And I think that that's something that maybe just the essence of our country being like, we're not going to do what you're telling us to do. We're going to do something on our own. We're going to move forward. We're going to be independent,
right. You know, the rebel mentality.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So you're like, and there are some people, and I think there is like this resurgence now of, people who are interested in these traditional things, obviously, you know, people are trying to learn some stuff and blacksmithing is like gone crazy and, knife making and all sorts of stuff. There's definitely a resurgence in these kind of basic skills and knowledges and things that people are bringing back. But I think really that's that mentality of following along and doing something to the best that you can because it's something that was part of your family and part of your culture is something that they do really well in, like, specifically Asian countries that is not as instilled into our country, into our, you know, our kids.
Yeah. I mean, it's all right. It's all what you celebrate. We do. We celebrate the rebel who's like, no, I'm not going to just do whatever you tell me. And there's definitely an advantage in that, but there's also an advantage of being respectful of your elders and listening to them and sometimes going with tradition and being like, well, my dad says I should go into this and do it. And yeah, you might not want to at 19, but I'm sure most of those guys at 40 are happy they're in the job that their parents did.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Again, as long as it's not Bobson's tile company.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like something boring or some BS.
Yeah. He did say, though, like that he was the youngest. He and like 10 other guys that were basically his same age were the youngest people doing that type of traditional pottery. So, you know, his parents, like, there are no 20 somethings learning it and doing it in Korea. So he was saying how he's worried that it might be a dying tradition. Like, there's this very specific way that they, you know, get the clay from the mountains and then they process it and they like work all this air into it so it's permeable, and then they, you know, bake it and they glaze it. All these things are made specifically so that way when you put the kimchi, you know, which is basically cabbage in like spices that's fermented, when you put all that inside this clay pot and you store it, if it's not the right pot, then it'll go bad. Like, it'll rot, you know, it'll go bad, but it needs to be able to stay and ferment. So you can't put like regular glazes on the pot because then that traps all the moisture inside and the kimchi will rot. So you have to put in this like specific glaze that's somewhat permeable but not completely permeable, and like it lets it breathe, and you know, it's crazy. And you know, if that, obviously there's technology now and supply and demand in our world is so high that we could probably get along fine without having to store kimchi in pots for however long. Let them ferment. Like, there's processes that you could do all that really quickly. But again, that's just one of those things that is, it's just kind of crazy. It was a really cool episode. And actually another thing that, that you remind me of when you were talking about, Iwata, you've seen Ready Player One, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nicole, my wife, has read the book. She read the book recently, actually. I think she might have read it twice or whatever. But it's amazingly, like, over the top, super, super duper geeky 80s, like, trivia book. You know, like, right. Everything is like, who knows the most about the 80s trivia? And they definitely touch on that in the movie. It's like, right. You need to know this. You need to know that he loved this movie and, you know, and he did this at this time and blah, blah, blah. Like, so in the movies, they really focused on how well the people who were searching for the eggs, whatever, how well they knew the architect guy, whatever his name was, right? The guy who started the company, yeah. How well they knew him. But in the books, right. It was like, how well and how thoroughly you knew 80s culture, the movies, the games, yeah, like, yeah. Everything. So it's kind of cool, like, just to think of, like, when you were talking about Iwata, I just imagine him being that guy, him being like the main guy who, like,
mm-hmm. Right, the programmer, and, yeah, the yeah, CEO, exactly. The
right, and leave behind this, like, you know, crazy evidence, you know, game search, like, thing. You got to find something to find this, you know, missing thing. And if you could do all this, then you'd be the new CEO of the company.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fascinating book. It's yeah, just super fun to read.
Yeah, and this book, I think I got halfway through it in a day. So it's
nice.
It's small-ish, but it's really yeah. good. And another thing I liked, he also made a point to interview all of the employees under him twice a year.
Oh wow.
So even if he didn't have direct contact, right. He wanted to hear from everyone. And I think he said his first few questions would always be about them, to settle them in, because everyone right. can talk about themselves.
Yeah.
There's no wrong answer to, how are you feeling? What do you think about this? You know?
Right. Yeah.
So he would start getting people talking by asking questions about themselves. How do you feel? Are you happy doing the job you're doing? Stuff like that. But, man, just I've had a lot of jobs where you never talk to the person.
Right.
You know, a level or two above you. And if you did, I mean, there's a lot of frustration that goes on in the lower levels for sure. And if you could let some of it out without fear of any repercussions.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm sure I think he also did mention in the book, like, yeah, I would explain myself and be tough, but I would let them speak, because you can only gain, you know, more information about how people feel. It's never going to hurt the company.
Right.
Even if yeah. it sounds attacking to you,
right?
Maybe if you interview everyone, maybe one guy's pissed and you can go, well, he's just a dick. But if 30 yeah. guys say the same thing, then you go, okay, right. Well, maybe there's something
there's
that can make
there, right?
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, what a cool thing. He said, yeah, it took a lot of time. He I talked to some people for an hour. I talked to some people for 5 hours. You know, it was just
right.
I like that. That was a cool thing. Jeez.
Yeah, everyone underneath him, Nintendo, really? Come on. No, just kidding.
Well, you know.
You know, within his realm.
Or maybe, like, maybe I, you know, actually, I think it was before Nintendo. I think it was, he had, he was a part of a company called, I think it was HAL Technologies, H-A-L, okay. Like in 2001.
Right.
And that was a company that Nintendo was paying to make games for them. So he was a part of that before he moved over to Nintendo, became the CEO eventually. Gotcha. So, but he did say, like, he had like 90 employees at one time. So,
right, yeah,
half the year you're talking to someone in your office. Pretty much every other day you have someone else come in and chat with them.
That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Can't imagine. You know, who's got time?
Well, right.
Anyway, that's what makes the difference, though, right? Is when you take that time and then you can make the adjustments that need to be made because you've collected all the data.
You
know,
right.
It's like, it's a world without data. You don't know. You know, it's funny. I when we think about that, like being a teacher, that's always like a, you know, like a buzzword, like data, blah blah blah. You know, but then now, like, as we get further and further into YouTube and podcasting and, you know, the different social medias and stuff, it really is important. And I mean, yes, of course, you can go along, you can just disregard other data and just do your own thing, and that's fine, and some people can do that and they are successful, but the majority of people who are successful are looking at those trends and looking at the data in a way that they can benefit from it, right? Because that's the thing, you don't want to just look at the trends and follow the trends, because then, you know, there's the reason why it's called a trend, right? It comes and goes.
Right.
But if you can, if we can like gather all that data and look at it and use and figure out ways in which it's beneficial, like you said, maybe there's that one thing, that one, you know, asshole guy, maybe he's the trend, right? But then there's all these other people saying something and you're like, okay, that makes sense. You know, like if I do this type of thing and if I do this type of thing, then, and I do that consistently, I can see that the data changes and grows and it helps me. So something to look at.
Yeah. Yeah. He, you know, yeah, he talks about all that stuff, trying to move on and how success can be the killer of innovation, right? Because you get comfortable in your success and then you just think you have it. And I think one of another cool thing he said was we would try to shock people in a good way. So almost it's crazy things like the DS where it was a top screen that looked like a Game Boy and the bottom screen was like a touchpad. People like, you know, they had never seen anything like that, or things like the Wii.
Right.
It was the first type of motion controllers. And, you know, it, it seemed like a novelty when everyone was just going for like processor power and graphics. They went for just pure fun.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, just can't imagine how many people just played like Wii Sports. Mm-hmm. You know, like just that game alone is just so innovative and so like the smoothness of interactivity between the handle and you know, the remote and what was happening on the screen was so nice. It was so like, oh, this is so nice. It's so fun and it's so easy.
It just works.
Yeah.
Which like, is a, that's an Apple saying. It just works.
Yeah, right.
Like the iPhone, the original iPhone. It just works. Everything works. Yeah, right. You know.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's definitely one of those things I think that, that Apple has always pushed that, you know, they're, and it's something that everyone knows, like, Macs don't crash, you know, they don't get like weird bugs like PCs do. It's just the way they're designed or whatever, but
yeah,
it just works.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's good. I like, yeah, I like that it just stems from like this idea that it's not, yeah, you can go it alone and you could have some success, but is it worth it? You know, like, what do you want? How do you move on? How do you want to grow? How do you want to move forward? Well, that's by bringing people who are like-minded together and working together to build yourselves up, you know, as a whole. I think that's why I'm really happy with the like relationships and friendships that we've built with people around YouTube and you know, in the knife making community and in the like axe community and the camping community, you know, and all these people who are now like, all of our names are floating around each other's heads and we're always thinking about each other and, you know, bringing people up. Like we're happy to bring someone up who's below us. And I'm also happy to push someone up who's above me, you know, like let's all work together. You know, that's why often like you and I fall into this, habit of recommending people who don't need recommending, but it's because we like what they do. You know, it's like, I like what they do. I'm excited to watch it. So,
you know, Well, we're still at the point where, we're just calling out cool things and whatever our call to action isn't going to boost anyone crazy anyway.
Right, exactly.
It's not it's not like Snoop Dogg tweeting out, like, hey, check this guy out. Or Joe Rogan having someone on his podcast where overnight they get, you know, 50,000 subscribers. It's not going to happen. But maybe one day when we get a little bigger, then we could do that, but.
Yeah, you know, and I think also at that time of, you know, when we get to that point and we are bigger, that we still, you know, just keep shouting people out who we like, things that we like. Like my recommendation today, which I'll talk about later, is just something that I think is really awesome that, you know, we'll get there. But yeah. So, yeah, man, what's been going on? What have you been up to this week other than, you know, hanging out with me and shooting videos.
Yeah, hanging out with you and shooting videos. No, I got so the saga of me getting hit by a tractor is over. Yeah, they totaled the car. I got that call yesterday, so got a little bit of cash. Not as little as I thought it'd be and not as much as I'd hoped it'd be, so I guess they did it perfect.
Right.
Don't overpay him and don't make him pissed. Well, that's kind of what they did. So we're debating on whether just to straight up buy a little bit cheaper car. Right. Because I had a Jeep Compass, an SUV, but it's like the cheapest Jeep you can get. So you're not going to get much, you know, from them. So I can't go out and get a really nice car from with what the insurance company gave me. And I've been talking about getting a truck again for a while. Always love having trucks. You know, it's either, I either feel if you want to have a good tool, obviously you want a truck, but yeah. if you're going to have something kind of fun to me, it's either I could buy a Mustang or I could buy a really nice truck.
That's
not
great.
That I really have, not that I have the money for either. And but I would love to have both, but yeah. you could kind of go either way. And one definitely has more of a chance of killing me. and I can't really do anything with it, right?
Right.
The only thing it's good at is trying to kill me.
Yeah.
The truck, lot bigger, lot safer, just as much fun.
Yeah, I agree. That's so funny too, because you know there's a whole plethora of vehicles out there. But if it's not like, and not everyone would feel this way, but I think a lot of men and a lot of people who are doers have that feeling, right? That a pickup truck is almost like a toy as much as a sports car is.
Yeah.
Because it also is rugged and you could kind of off-road with it, right? It has that ability to do some stuff, but then it's also this awesome tool, you know, and
right.
you feel big and you feel like strong and it's, you know, yeah.
I still do a little bit, but I used to make fun of just people driving around in like F-350s. And I was just saying, like, you're never going to tow anything that needs an F-350 unless you're a contractor or like my wife's parents, they did have a big, big old RV.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
So they kind of needed that, but a lot of people don't need it. But then, so I was like, it's kind of stupid. Then I ran some errands in their 350. And I was like, oh yeah. Oh baby.
The power.
It's worth it. I don't care what I'm doing. I don't care if I'm going to Chick-fil-A, man. I want to drive this thing. You're over top everyone. You take up 5 parking spots, man. It's great.
Man, it's amazing. Also, like, trucks have gotten a lot bigger. Now, obviously, they're still smaller versions of trucks, but they've just gotten so big. I mean, I have an F-150, you know, extended cab and full-size 8-foot bed. From 1989, and this difference between the size of that truck, and it's got a 5.0 engine in it, this difference between just the pure size of like the body of the truck compared to a modern F-150 is like, modern F-150s are so much taller, wider, fatter, like they're so big. I did drive a brand new F-150, two summers ago, I think my wife's car got hit. And so we had a rental, and we ended up driving it up to New York and back, because it was right when we were going on vacation, and we're like,
they gave you an F-150 as a rental?
Yeah, because we wanted a a vehicle that could it was either we needed an SUV with a rack so we could put our roof rack on, because we were going on vacation, we had to bring a bunch of stuff, so it was like either that or a pickup truck, and so we got the pickup truck. It was like, this is awesome. So yeah, it was like all super cush, you know, inside, like super comfortable.
Was it a 4-door or a super cab?
It was a extended cab. So it was a 2-door, I think.
So it's a 2-door with the small doors that you can fold out.
Yeah, I think so. I think
it was. Spoiler, that's what I've been looking for.
Right, yeah.
Is I think what I'm going to do is get an F-150 that's about 10 to 7 years old.
Right.
Super cab, so you still get the 6.5-foot bed.
Right.
Yep. So sometimes you do the 4-door or the whatever they call it, and you get a smaller bed. Like, once you start doing like 4-foot beds, it's just,
that's a joke.
Not really useful anymore.
No, I'm almost completely against even 6-foot beds. At least 6-foot beds.
Eight's really what you're going for.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I've used my full size bed for so many things, you know, that are really big and wouldn't have worked in a 6-foot bed. I mean, yeah, I could get along with a 6-foot bed if, you know, someone wanted to give me one, but with my choice, you know. But yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, once you get those, the trucks are so much bigger nowadays that a F-150 with an 8-foot bed and extended cab is going to be almost, you know, probably a few feet longer than my
F-150.
Huge.
So I've been looking at the 150s super cab. It's enough room to be able to put a baby seat in the back, which is all I'm looking for.
Yeah.
6.5-foot bed, and so that's what we're aiming for. So I'm pretty excited.
Nice. That's sweet.
Because it's either go for a cheap car again, or use this money for a down payment.
Right.
That's probably what we're going to do. And, you know, the wife's cool with it, so, hey, might as well go ahead.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Hey, and I was thinking, I was like, should I just get a car? Because I'm driving to the city sometimes, and I was like, why am I arguing with myself? Wife's cool with it, and I want it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So, like, how many more green flags do I, like, go, do it. What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's, I don't know. It's one of those things, like, you have to be in it every day. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yes, there's, what is it for? Is it, like, purely for just transportation and nothing else? Well, then, yeah, if it's purely for that and you don't have any, like, desire to have this vehicle, for some other reasons, then you get the most economical thing you can get. You like a smart car, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But if also, you want it to be a little more versatile. And
having a truck inspires work, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're like,
absolutely.
It's like having any new tool. You're like, what can I do with it? What can I cut with it? A truck's like, all right, I gotta move some stuff. Maybe we should go pick up some stuff. Like,
yeah,
I wanna inspire more projects and things. So a truck's a good start.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and that's actually when I got my current truck, which is on its last legs, unfortunately. But when I got it, one of the guys who I worked with at the time was like, oh yeah, you know that. Yeah, it's like we were just talking truck stuff, and he was like, yeah, when I got, you know, every truck that I've had has paid for itself in the work that I've been able to do with it. You know, and he does a bunch of stuff. He will haul stuff for people. But sure enough, like within the first, you know, like 3 months of having our pickup truck, there was like a ad on Craigslist or something or Facebook Marketplace for someone nearby who had some like old mattresses or old beds or something that they needed to get rid of, but they didn't have any way to it. So they just put a thing out there. It was like, you know, we're willing to pay someone $40 to come and pick up this bed and take it to the dump. You know, we're like, oh, we can do that. You know, like it was like 20 minutes away or maybe 15 minutes away, drove up, picked it up.
And how much did they give you?
Like $40.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, that, you know, yeah, we probably spent like $3 in gas and, you know, and spent an hour, you know, so for like, for an hour's work, we got $35 or something. You know, I was like,
yeah, it's, yeah, you know,
yeah,
that's not bad.
Right. Exactly.
Or you could be, you could be our dad and be a little bit too nice and just start doing things for people. And then
yeah, right.
And then getting your sons to come help.
Right, exactly.
get this call all the time. Hey, I got this guy. He needs us to move this thing. I'm like, who? I've never met this person. Who is this? Why are you doing it? Well, I met him and he said he needed and
he's a good guy.
You know. Well, he's a good guy. I'm like, so you got all of us to you promised our help.
Right.
But then now I feel bad. All right, yeah, we'll do it.
Right, exactly.
You're going to be so nice. We all have to be nice with you.
Dang it, Dad.
Stop being nice to random people.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I got some boys. I'll bring them. No, we could do it. No problem, no problem. We'll do it.
He's got his labor force.
I'll do it. I'll do it for free. I'll get other people to do it for free.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's all
right.
I'll take my good karma when I can get it.
Right, yep. Yeah, exactly. Dad helps us get that good karma.
Yeah, like, okay. Sometimes you got to encourage people to do good.
Yeah, right. That's great.
So, again, I guess we're halfway through. We didn't talk about what we kind of wanted to. We want to talk about camping and camping trips and
the
joys of camping and the tools of camping and also your most recent trip. Can you start with some of the tools you bring, like backpacking, and I'll be right back.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, thinking about like our most recent, now I started backpacking when me and my wife were in college, and a good friend of ours, Jason Colvin, he and his wife at the time were very much into backpacking. I think that she would lead the backpacking club at Towson University. I think that's where it was. And so they would go to this place in West Virginia called Dolly Sods. And so anyone who is from this area is into backpacking may or may not know that. But Dolly Sods is this beautiful, like no evidence left behind camp backpacking property out in West Virginia. near Seneca Rocks in the George Washington National Forest. And it's just this beautiful landscape. It has deciduous forest. It has coniferous forest. There are big areas of just rhododendrons. There's like almost a plateau on top of the hills and stuff. And it's this beautiful like acreage and thousands of acres that are all intertwined and webbed with trails. And so I started backpacking, going places like that, which was just so amazing. And we grew up camping my entire life.
Is this Dali Saj?
Dali Saj, yeah.
So I win.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
You came back just in time.
I just came back and I took a guess.
But yeah, so we had grown up car camping our entire lives. Like just since Devin was, I think my mom says since Devin was one, we would camp every summer.
I think I was two, to be fair.
Okay.
But pretty close.
Right, exactly. So from then until we were all, maybe even now, you know, once every two or three years, we'll all do it together. We can't all kind of arrange it so well anymore, but we still do it pretty often. But we've been going camping. And so there was that type of camping, car camping, which is completely different than backpacking. Like, so when I started backpacking, you know, I was like, I had this kind of funky knife that worked, but I wasn't super happy with it, which is the reason why I decided to make my first knife. I wanted to make one that did kind of what I wanted to do, was a little bit lighter and a little bit more versatile. And then, you know, like I had this gigantic pack, which I don't necessarily need. So then I got a smaller pack, and then, you know, I would bring like just the knife, and sometimes I'd bring like a saw or something if I could find something. And then I switched over to taking like a tomahawk, a cold steel trail hawk, which I cleaned up and I bring that. So it was really light, but it could do a lot of stuff. You know, and then things like just a few amounts of string and, maybe a couple, like, you know, bring some water purifying tablets instead of a pump. You know, so I just kind of kept whittling down the amount of things I brought, because in my mind with backpacking, it's all about self-sufficiency in the most compact thing you can bring with you. It's like,
right,
what's the bare minimum I can bring to survive easily over this amount of time that I'm going?
Yeah.
And you know, I'm not like a purist. I'll bring like freeze-dried, you know, we usually do two or three nights, you know, we'll bring some freeze-dried food and stuff like that. But
it's, yeah. And you every trip, I feel like you probably get lighter. And
yeah,
all you need to do is pick up like an experienced person's pack to go, oh,
right,
man,
yeah,
this is great. This is like half the size of mine. Or it's something where you get in a situation like a brother Derek and his best friend Charles, where they start the Appalachian Trail. And, you know, the first 100 miles, there's just litter on all sides of the trails because people are just ditching things.
Right.
You start with like 100 pounds. And then by the time you're a few days in, you're like half the weight. Like, I don't need this extra sweater. I don't need five pots and pans. I don't, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And just leaving them behind in caches and stuff for other people. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. Yeah. And that's, and some of that, I mean, now there's obviously a difference between a long form hiker,
right,
like the AT or any of the longer trails around, and like a weekend backpacker, like I am. And that's just out of, that's what I've had the availability to do since I started backpacking. So really I could take more weight because I'm only doing it for a couple of days, you know, weekend. So it's not a huge deal, but to me it's definitely the mindset of I have to carry. And that's the other thing too. Like if I'm going to go with a group of people, I'm not carrying anyone else's shit. You know, like if you're bringing stuff that you can't carry because it's too heavy for you, sorry. Like,
I know,
I'm not
going to
carry any of my stuff.
Wouldn't even carry Sadie's stuff, you know? You put that little pack on.
Yeah, right, exactly. She had her own shit.
Carry your own shit, bitch.
But, you know, like my wife and I, obviously, we always go together. So we have things that are for both of us. So then we split up that weight, right? That's
right,
different than, like, going with a bunch of people and then someone's, like, lagging behind because they're real heavy. I'm not going to carry any of their shit. Like, that's the whole point. I have a light pack is because I don't want to have to carry a bunch of stuff when I'm walking. Even so much that like I've gone backpacking quite a few times with my mom and some friends of hers, and I've almost been on the edge of taking some of her stuff because my mom always carries, like, she always carries this gigantic pack. Like, she just likes conveniences of having it. And, you know, when we're going backpacking for a couple of days, it's fine. But sometimes I'm like, you know, I'm like helping her lift it up. I'm like, man, this thing weighs, you know, like 60 pounds and my pack weighs like 20 or 30, you know, like,
right.
Should I offer to take something? You know, cause I'm, you know, twice as tall and twice as heavy and five times as strong as my mom, you know, but I'm like, no, that's her burden to carry. You know, like that's the backpacker mindset.
It's literally your burden to carry.
Exactly. If you're going to bring the stuff that you want to be, you want to have those conveniences, then you got to carry them on your back.
There's no metaphor here. You have a lot of baggage.
Yeah, exactly. It's your you burden to deal carry. With. You have baggage.
It's your burden.
These are all literal statements.
Yes. There's no hidden meaning here. Lighten your pack.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, not, I don't know if this is directly related, but when we started camping, car camping, when we were kids, you know, we had lesser amount of things, right? So you had like tents and whatever, you have what you need to get by. But then over the years, we would acquire more and more things to make car camping. So when I say car camping, I mean taking a car, going to a campground and setting up at a campsite and staying there for however long you're staying. You're not traveling, right?
Right.
So, you know, we would like our conveniences of car camping got so nice that we would like go, we'd set up these gigantic tarps over our entire site. We put up our tents, which were all big, nice, comfortable, open tents. You didn't have to like crouch and like squeeze to get inside.
Dome tents.
All like queen size air mattresses that were 8 inches thick. You know, like,
Well, at the time we didn't have the option, but it was always camping stuff. It was never bullshit. It wasn't like, well, it wasn't available, but you know, there was no like TVs and this and Wi-Fi and like, we didn't really have the option, but it was just to make camping more comfortable.
Right. Yeah.
It wasn't to bring in the luxuries of normal life. It was just to make this kind of rough thing not as rough, and I've never really, other than one or two trips, I've never roughed it. It's always been that a comfortable big air mattress, big tent, big tarp over in case it rains. Warm showers, we always did. You had to have warm showers nearby,
right? Yeah.
We always wanted a lake nearby to swim, because that's what you do have, or that's what we always did.
Yep.
Most of the day was going down to the lake, go to the beach, spend all day there, and then come back. But I haven't roughed it much. I went on, I don't know, one trip with you, and I mean, and there's a couple different types of camping. There's like family camping,
right? Yeah,
where that's evolved like we're talking about, and now it's more like a mixture of like having fun friend camping,
right? Yeah,
like
exactly.
I've gone camping a lot. On the Shenandoah, I know some people, some friends. I went a lot in my 20s to some land that they had.
And then you just bring just a tent and you're just a tent, right? Everyone brings food and coolers and beer, right? And you have a tent.
That's right. Most of your space is for coolers and beer and whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever fun and things. Footballs. And, right. Yeah.
That's become a little bit. Now we're older, I guess the influence of us and our brothers bringing a little bit more, you know, beer and stuff and for family camping. But last one
hasn't
we did
changed much. But, yeah. Other than that,
no, that last one we did was really fun. And I think about that a good bit.
Yeah.
And we went to Rocky Gap in Western Maryland. Last time we had pretty much everyone there. That was really nice, and we had a really good time. So hopefully this summer or next summer we can work it out again, because that was really fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and we were, as you know, one of the reasons why we're talking about it is because this just past weekend I went camping, car camping with my family, and then a couple of our close friends, kind of our pod of friends. We all went car camping together for the weekend, and in that instance, you know, like, mine and my wife and my daughter's supplies for camping have evolved. We have a lot of backpacking stuff, but we also have car camping stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're always like evolving like the type of air mattress to sleep on. And
do you want to talk about how the vehicle situation went?
Sure. So, we have a Nissan Rogue, 2016 Nissan Rogue, you know, SUV crossover vehicle. And we don't have a trailer hitch on it, but we have gotten a roof rack for it, which, my wife was driving down the road one day and just a whole piece of the aftermarket roof rack just flew off the car. So she saw it happen, but for some reason, don't ask me why, she didn't stop and try to pick it up. She just went to work, continued down the road. You know, it's a country road. It's not like she was on a highway. So, and then she calls me and tells me what happened. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, did you find all the pieces? She's like, well, I didn't stop. It's still on the road. I was like, what? You didn't stop and get all the stuff? Like we could put it back on. Like we could. More than likely it was user error, you know, like they're designed pretty well. It's not a super complicated system as long as it's latched in correctly, right, and it's all tight. And maybe it was, and maybe their system's not great. You know, it was like I said, an aftermarket. It wasn't like a super amazing name brand, but it's a good brand. But yeah, when we ended up, we did go back and try to find, we found as much as we could, but there's like missing like two or three pieces. And so frustrated. I was like, why didn't you just stop at the time and look? And so now we've had this like saga of trying to work with this company to replace or send us another version of it, you know, one that's not going to fly off our vehicle. And so we've just bounced around and bounced around and bounced around. And it's so much. And my wife and I are just so laid back too, that it's, there's only so much you can fight, you know, you're like, and the thing is that those pieces that we need, we can't just buy those pieces. We have to buy these like sets of pieces, which if we could buy just the piece, it might be like $20, but then you got to buy this set, which is like $120, and it's got all this random shit with it that we don't need. We just need this one little like rubber foot, you know, it's like, it's so frustrating. You know,
and we talk about this all the time, customer service. If they would just, even if they gave you the shit for free, you would be a customer for life.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do they not understand that? I mean, yes, there are some people who try to get away with stuff and go, and they complain at every little place they go to and try to get the free gift cards and the free things and the. But most people, if you just help them out and throw a little bit of money their way,
right?
even if they just said yes, we'll give you the parts, or you know, we'll just send them to you for free.
Right.
They would have a customer for life. I don't understand why companies don't do this.
Yeah. And it's not even like we were asking for all the everything. All we were saying was like, hey, this is what happened. It flew off the car. You know, these are the pieces that we want. Now, maybe there's like a liability thing. They can't just send you those pieces. They have to do this big investigation. Nicole had to take all these pictures and send them. And then they kept losing them.
Well,
and
that's
she had to
the thing.
Like five times. And
yeah. If they would have said, oh, I'm so sorry that happened to you.
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's such a pain.
Yeah.
Look, we'll just send, even like the best way they could have done it, we'll send you a whole new one, that same model. We hope this doesn't, you know, tarnish our name. We want to keep you as customers, and thank you so much for buying our product in the first place.
Right.
Like I said, you guys probably would have never bought another carrier by any other company. You would have always gone back to them.
Right, exactly. And, you know, like retail, this thing was like maybe $350 or $400. So it's not like their cost price is not that, you know, that's like this big company that, you know, their cost price of what they're sending us plus maybe shipping is maybe $150, you know?
Right.
Like,
and if they don't have the structure to just send parts,
right,
which is that's shady business anyway,
right?
Because they can send small things, but they want you to buy the whole pack of stuff, which is just, that's shady business. But so shame on them if they don't have the structure to just send one or two things.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that was the thing. It was like with them, they were only concerned about the entire issue. And like it never came up to like just replace pieces. But if we look online, we can see the pieces, but we can't get them just individual. It's just frustrating. But all this to say that we don't have a roof rack on top of our car. So we didn't take that vehicle because we wanted to bring our daughter's bike. Now we don't have a roof rack for a bike system anyway, so we would have had to figure something out, but we do have a car top carrier that's a pretty big size.
Excuse me.
So if we would have had the car top carrier, we could have put all of our supplies up in the car top carrier, which we have, and then we would have had room in the back of the vehicle for a bike, right? And it would have not been an issue. And then our friends, the Porters, they reached out and they said, like, could you also bring our son's bike, their son, Emery, who's been on the channel a couple of times. And so we were going to bring his bike too. So we needed to work it out. So I called my mom and my dad. They have an SUV with a hitch, a trailer hitch. And so I called them and said, hey, you know, can I switch vehicles with you for the weekend so I can take this? I have a bike rack for a hitch. And so I was happy to use that. And they were like, yeah, Devin has the Kia. So we'll just talk to Devin. I was like, oh yeah, duh, I know that you had the Kia, because the whole like getting run into by a gator thing. So we just called you up and be like, hey, can we switch vehicles with you? And you know, it was like a Friday afternoon, whatever, we dropped off our car and took the Kia, and then when you came by on, was that Monday, to film, you brought it back. So.
Yeah. And I, you know, left you guys with no gas, but not intentionally. I didn't know someone else was going to take the car and do a switch out.
Nicole said, Devin said, you should be able to make it to Hunt Valley. Like, oh,
yeah.
You should be able to make
it was one of those, you're low, so just go to the first gas station available.
Right.
You don't have to, like, maybe not the first one, but the first one on your way home. That's the level it is.
Right. And, you know, I mean, we're obviously not blameless. Nicole has run out of gas, unfortunately, more than one time. So she knows. Usually she's like, but like you said, you know, you're not expecting someone else to do it. You take on that own responsibility. You're ready to take that, the consequence, because you're right. Thinking it's just for you, you know? So, yeah. And then my wife filled it up. She was like, that car has such a huge tank. I think she put like almost $50 in to fill it up. And we're like, we're going to use like $15 and give it back to Devin. Like,
you should have stopped at 30.
I know. I was like, why'd you put so much in? She's like, oh, no, that's just what we do, you know? It's like, because we're adults. When we put gas in the car, we just fill it up.
Like, what are you trying to say?
Yeah, what happens?
Actually, yeah, Dad gave it. He gave it to me, and I think it at half, and I just kind of ran it down. I do remember thinking the last time, like, oh, it's low. And that's one of those two things when you switch a car. Your normal, all your dials and lights and things are in different places, right? So, the thing you're normally subconsciously looking out for just isn't there,
right?
Until you just do a normal check, like, hey, let me check. Oh, wow. Oh, there's the gas. Okay, yeah, we're low.
Yeah, right. Yeah, okay.
But
yeah, so we had that vehicle for the weekend, which is fine. You know, like I said, it's basically the same size as ours, but it did have the hitch, so we were going to take the bikes. And so for this, like when I go, you know, we bring kind of, we're kind of back at the bare minimum of car camping stage, right? So we have our tent. We have a pop-up, like an 8x8 pop-up that we could bring with us. We do have the big tarps, but we usually don't bring them. I have in the past when we've gone with friends and stuff, but this time I was just like, we're not going to bring it. There was like no rain supposed to be for the weekend. So we were usually when we go with our family, with my mom and all of our brothers, we would go for a week or 10 days and occasionally, you know, 2 weeks. So it was almost always going to be rain a few of those days. So we were just ready. So we bring that. We always bring our camp stove, and we have like a propane, lantern as well as some other lanterns. And I have actually one, I always carry on me camping, and then also sometimes just as an EDC carry is the little O-light that we were sent a while back when we did the video with the O-lights in it. I really like it. It's a really small one, has a pocket clip, and it has two settings. It has what they call their moonlight setting, which I think is like 15 lumens, so it's just barely bright enough. And then they have, then it's like a nice, really bright setting, which is like 150 lumens. So the difference between those two is just one click. It just has a single click in the back, but it's really nice to have that moonlight setting.
That low
almost
setting.
Everything you need to do out in the dark, because that amount of lumens when you're like in pitch black is plenty bright enough. You know, and then if you're like walking down a trail or whatever, you know, then you can bump it up and have the really bright. But it's really nice to have that low light setting. So I had let my daughter, Corinne, go out. She's playing with all the kids over there, and they're all running around with flashlights and stuff at night. And she comes back, and I'm sitting by the fire, and she comes up behind me, and she's sitting on this rock. And I had like a premonition that she had lost the light, but I was like, you have my flashlight? And she's like, no, I lost it. I was like, You're kidding. She's like, no. She's like, but I know where it is. I just can't find it right now, but I know exactly where it is. We'll wait. Tomorrow we can find it in the daylight. And I was like, all right. I was like, you sure? But, you know, she was pretty confident. So I trusted her. I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. She's pretty confident. She knows, like, and sure enough, we did go look for it the next day. And she told me exactly where she dropped it because she remembers dropping it from this one spot where she was kind of up on a log and there was another log below her. So the possibility that is that it could have hit the log and gone either way. Like it had one main trajectory that it should have gone, but it could have gone either way. So we looked around and below it, there were all these like brambles and sticker bushes and stuff. So you kind of had to like look in without really feeling around. And I did find it, but came away with a pretty sweet scratch on my hand. That looks pretty badass. I was like, ooh, look at that cool scratch. It's like,
oh, and yeah, you can see that in the... When did you... We got a couple good shots of it.
The fire pit video.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Got a lot of good shots of your cool scratch.
That's right, scratch, I was like grabbing it. Yeah, check out that sweet scratch. It's funny because I didn't feel it at all either. I got, after like finding the flashlight and going back and walking back to the site, and I was doing something else, and I reached over and I realized I had this scratch on my hand. It's like a... I don't know how to explain it. Like... two lines that come together in a point, so it's almost like
it's like a wonky wishbone almost, yeah, but inverted, right, exactly. like yeah. You know, it goes the other way,
almost like a tribal tattoo, so like long and spiky, you know, like right on, ooh, my hand, right between my like thumb and my forefinger. Pretty sweet. I was like, well, maybe that'll leave a cool scar, but the fact that I didn't feel it at all, so it's like just barely a surface scratch, but yeah so I was like, it's been itchy today, it's the little scab is coming off.
Just a scratch.
It's just a scratch.
Merely a flesh wound.
But yeah, so we took all that stuff, and then of course, you know, I brought 4 axes because that's what you do when you go camping for a weekend and you're car camping.
No, honestly, like, yeah, that's what you do when you go camping for a weekend.
That's what I do. our friend Liz, who is actually in the smithy build video, the woman that was helping us out in the video, she texted our group and my buddy Sean from Crafting a Life I Want. You know, he and I both love axes and do all sorts of stuff with axes. So she like texted the group and was like, you know, make sure you guys bring your, you know, bring an axe or 3. Like she knew that we're going to bring. So like I said, like I ended up bringing 4, and originally I was going to bring 3. I was going to bring like a felling axe, like a bigger axe, just to be able to like cut if we were chopping, not really chopping down trees, but you know, cutting bigger stuff. And then a boy's axe, because that middle size is really nice to have. It's pretty much versatile for anything, and everyone can use it. It's light enough that anyone can use it, as well as like the kids can use it if they wanted to. And then a smaller hatchet, like the Bushcraft mod hatchet, because that one's really nice to have like around the fire to split up kindling and stuff, and it has the hammer pole in the end, so I figured it'd be good for hammering in stakes and things if we needed to. So I was going to bring those 3, and then I realized that I didn't really have a good axe for splitting if we were splitting apart bigger wood. I wouldn't have brought anything. I would have just used the boy's axe because that had a little bit more wedge shape than the felling axe, and that would have been fine. But I do have what I call my speed splitter, which it's a Kelly Perfect head that had a bunch of damage to it, so I modified it down and made it smaller, so it's a pretty small head, but it's a really steep wedge, so from the cutting edge it comes back, and by when it hit at the back of the end of the pole, it's maybe 1.25 inches wide and a pretty much like straight wedge all the way to the front, so it's really good for splitting, but it's really light, and I have it on a maybe like a 24 inch handle, so it's on like a long enough handle, it's really light, so it's just really good for splitting wood, you know, quickly, and it's because it's really light.
Was that the one you were chopping up the trees for the smithy? It was a Kelly something, I forget, because you said it. You were like holding it. You're like Kelly Speed something.
Yeah, that's probably was my speed splitter.
So it was the one. Yeah, you seemed very happy splitter. With it.
Yeah, I love that.
I put that in the video because you were describing it. I don't know if you were describing it to anyone in general.
Right.
You were.
Yeah, that's what I call my speed splitter, because when I'm splitting out rounds and stuff, it's so light and quick that you can just like whip it through. But it's got so much of a wedge that because it's light, you can move it quickly and it just pops wood apart. So it's a really nice axe. So I did get questioned, though, by some of the children. They're like, why do you have so many axes? You shut up. How about that?
Why, you stupid little child, shut up.
What are you, like, seven? What do you know?
What do you know? You lose flashlights in the woods.
Yeah, right. I mean, I did explain. I was like, all right, these are the reasons. I wasn't going to bring them all. I was going to bring these three because it's fun to have these three.
I love actions.
Because three is better than two. But then once I had these three, I was like, oh, wait, what about this one? You know?
What if I split wood? I have a favorite memory of friend camping, which is, you know, just drunk camping by the river in the Shenandoah, like I said before. But friend camping, it was just a quick one. You know, we're always splitting our own wood and stuff, and there was a really big log, and everyone was trying, they couldn't do it, or maybe it was just one guy, and I'm sitting there making fun of him, and like critiquing his technique, and he's a big guy, and then actually a bunch of guys kept trying, and they were going through, and I was just making fun of everyone, so finally they, you know, the whole like crowd turned on me, like, ah, you do it, like, go ahead, let's say it, ba-ba-ba, you know, and then everyone had tried. Just like the sword and the stone, man, but opposite. I just one super chop, just bam, right down the middle, and everyone went, ah! Nice. It was like when you see someone slam dunk on someone in those End One videos.
Yeah, right. Everyone runs around. Yeah, runs around.
Oh, yeah. That's a good memory.
I like how everyone holds everyone else back when that happens. You know, it's like, there's always like, everyone's like, trying to run forward and everyone's holding everyone else back. It's like, you can't run forward, but it's like something about that reaction. It's like, oh, it's so crazy. Like, everyone's holding everyone from running forward onto the court.
Silliness.
That's awesome.
But that was cool.
I've had some experiences like that as well. Yeah. It's just, there's something so nice about camping, you know, just fun. Mm. You know, like, I don't know. And
It's a great thing.
I was going to, like, wake up early, you know, it's like the birds are chirping, and as long as it's not crazy, you don't have that, like, one weird bird that's like, bah, bah, right over your tent at 5:30, you know, when it's just about to be light out.
Or there's a cricket in your tent. Like, what? Come on, what the heck?
But, yeah, it's so nice. You can wake up early and just chilly out or whatever, you know, depending on where you are, and make a little fire, get things going, and people come out, and you can – relax and sit around. It's just so, it's so relaxing. It's so nice.
I do. I love car camping. Mm. I love that mix of relaxation, because sometimes when you go friend camping, it's not relaxing. You're just kind of partying, right?
Right.
It's party camping. So it's family camping or party camping. And, you know, it's like too much beer and too much country music comes out. Right. Where you're exactly. You can only take like 2 days of that. And you're like, I got to go back. But kind of family car camping is you can take your time. You can read. You can have a week and a half, or even last time, I think it was only 4 days. But it's so nice. Every time we get out there, it feels right. When you get a good group, you have like four, maybe five different campsites you can just wander to. And it's what a great thing.
It is. Yeah, it's really nice. And it's just like, you know, and usually everyone's on the same page. Everyone's willing to like pitch in and help out wherever, you know, collect firewood or make a meal or do dishes, or, you know, it's like these little chores, but everyone's just there and we're just hanging out. You know, people are like, playing guitar and, you know, listening to music, reading books, having a fire, chatting. And the older we get, you know, all those conversations and things we have when we're just relaxing, sitting around, just get that much more and more deeper. And, you know, we're kind of rehashing things because now we don't obviously live together all the time like we did when we were kids. So we're like telling stories and, you know, yeah, it's so much fun. I love just like the stories from years and years of doing this have just been built up. You know, like I remember when we were younger, we would often go to a campground called Sharondo Lake Camp. Mm-hmm. Which is down in the Shenandoah Valley, down, I guess, it's like Virginia, like Southern Virginia. Mm-hmm. So there's a lake and like kind of a small lake. And then the main beachy area. And then most of the campground was kind of up on the hill. One time I remember specifically, like, we were playing, we were running around this trail around the edge of the lake, and I was running and I fell and I hit my knee on a stone, like a sharp stone, and it like busted my kneecap pretty good. And I was bleeding pretty heavily, like, from my knee. And I think Derek, like, from that spot, which is probably, I don't know, like, a 1,000 yards or something from, you know, like, from our campsite up on the hill. Yeah, like, it probably, it may have been further or less than that. It's hard to tell because I remember these memories from being when I was a kid.
It was, like, 35 feet.
Yeah, right. From there, he, like, yelled to our mom. He's like, "Mom!" And, like, she heard it from the campsite. And I think ended up, like, coming down to the beach because she heard him yell from there. I was like, that's crazy. Like, and she heard someone yell and recognized it as Derek's voice and came down. Like, I, like, hobbled out of the woods all bleeding from my leg and stuff. It was nuts. Actually,
that's mom powers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's the same thing that wakes Caitlin up when my daughter makes the tiniest noise, wakes her up and I snore through it. that's mom powers. It just she's up, she hears it. Wait, what was that?
Yeah, right, something. I have like two possible Bigfoot stories from my life. One was
so right. Didn't we do the bet or no bet on this one?
Yeah, we did
before. You said bet. Did you say
bet? Yeah, I said bet. Yeah.
Okay.
I know. Yeah. You know, who knows? Yeah. But I have two stories that from my experience that I couldn't really explain at the time. So one, I'll start the one that one happened at Sharonda Lake. The other one happened at a property that my parents owned that we were going to build a house on, but we never did, which is actually really close to where they live now here in northern Baltimore County. So we would often go, this is when we were in high school, we would go, my brothers and I and maybe some friends, and we would go stay, and there was a little cabin on the property, just like a one-room cabin with a little kitchen area and a bed, and, you know, a wood stove, run down, just a single cabin. And we would go and we'd stay there for a night or two nights. You know, we'd go and hang out for the weekend or whatever. And, you know, we'd bring just like the bare minimum of food and we would play what we would call the gun game. And so the gun game is, and we did it in multiple versions. You would either have the BB gun game or you just have the regular gun game. And that the gun game is everyone goes out. You're all independently spying around really quietly, either during the day or at night. Sometimes you could be in teams. Usually it's individually. And the goal is to be able to hide or move around and sneak up on someone or have someone walk by you while you're hiding to the point where they are close enough that you can then, when they're within distance, you can say, like, bang, you're dead. Right? So it's this, right, this super spy game. You're all just moving around trying to be as quiet as possible. So we were playing the gun game, and it was at night, or either we started in the afternoon and it went into the evening, but we would play like in pitch black at night because it was fun, you know, just like run around in the dark and just playing the gun game. So right. I had crossed over this stream that was on the property. I was in this little kind of patch of weeds and grass and stuff that was kind of overgrown. So I was kind of in the middle of it. And I heard someone coming, walking along, right? Kind of slow, just like normal, you know, so I assumed it was one of the guys, right? Cause we're all moving around, you know, and there were deer and things out there. So you'd hear all sorts of little noises, but usually you could tell if it's someone walking. So I'm kind of there. And, I don't think I actually stood up and was like, said bang, cause it was still a little bit out of my range. We kind of had like a, almost like an unwritten rule that they had to be within like 10 or 15 feet of you. Right. Cause then you know that you're within range. You got them. It's not like you see them 40 or 50 or 60 feet away and you're like, bang, you're dead. Cause that's not the point. The whole point is kind of like that close combat, whatever. So I think I stood up really slowly and then saw what I thought was our brother Derek, because one of Derek's, one of the things he always loved and he always thought was that red was a really good color to wear at night, because red, the value of red is really dark, just like browns and blacks. So as long as there's not bright light on you, the red would hide you really well. So I think he might have actually been wearing like a red jacket that night. And Derek was always like the best spy out of all of us, so he normally won anyway.
he's the oldest.
Yeah, he's the oldest, right. And and he was in the Marines. I mean, this was before he was in the Marines, but he's always had that mentality. He's loved spy, you know.
Yeah, we don't still play now.
Yeah, right. We're playing the gun game this weekend. unfortunately.
That'd be actually kind of sweet.
Yeah, it'd be awesome. But yeah, so I stand up and I see this kind of reddish-brown thing moving, 20, 30 feet away from me, kind of across my point of view from right to left. And I was like a little weirded out because it kind of looked like Derek, but kind of not. I can't remember if I made a noise or something, but I feel like I made a noise. And then whatever it was, like, just ran across from my right to my left, pretty much across my point of view, and just ran off. But the way it was running were these like really large steps, and it could have been a deer, right? It could have been just like a white-tailed deer, because they've got that reddish brown coat. It was a little bit more dark reddish brown than that. But the difference was that it seemed like it was really tall. Like it was a chest level of like, you know, Derek, our brother, you know, so 6 or 7 or like 6 feet or so tall. So if it were a deer, white-tailed deer around here, you know, their main body would be 3.5, 4 feet or so off the ground, right? They're not super tall. So it was like this color that was up high and moving in these like really long, even strides, like boom, 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 ran off. And I was like, it was super weird. I just remember I was like completely freaked out, and I just like walked really briskly back to the cabin. And I was like, I don't know what I just saw, but it didn't seem like a deer, and it wasn't Derek, and something that was taking these like really long strides seemed like, you know, running strides and not like hopping strides. So
if we're playing devil's advocate, so it probably was a deer.
Right. Yeah. That's what I think. It probably was a deer.
Or, I mean, even if you took, this is always the thing I think in my head, like if you took two options, it's either there's an ape hominid style walking being
<bipedal.
laughs> outside, you know, outside of the county.
Right.
Or let's say it's the most, the closest thing to that is a man in like a monkey suit pranking people.
Right. Yeah.
It's always more probable
that it's by
like that it's someone, even how like unbelievable that would be, right, that you just stumble on someone in a monkey suit in the woods. That's gotta be more probable by thousands of percents than a secret human monkey thing that's never been like captured on camera.
Yeah, I guess.
That's what I would say.
Yeah. But I mean, there's like,
especially now with all the phones and all the stupid Bigfoot shows.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, there are thousands of accounts of people seeing things in the woods.
Yeah, yeah.
But not thousands of accounts of people seeing dudes dressed in monkeys. But I guess you wouldn't know, you know, like you wouldn't know
monkey
suit or not, right? Yeah.
If you see what you want to see, and if that's just me playing devil's advocate. Well, that's kind of how I feel too. But
yeah.
I mean, we all want to see something like that, and it would be cool,
right?
But it's just nowadays, especially now with everyone having phones and cameras,
right? And I mean, you know, where we were, that woods area is not like it was a huge nature reserve that was thousands of square miles. It's a patch of woods that might be a square mile or 2 square miles. You know, so, right. You know.
So I don't think they're living in basically the suburbs of Baltimore.
They can become invisible. They can do whatever they want.
They pull in their ear. They go right down chimneys. It's crazy.
Yeah. So the other time, my other story is where we were at Charondo Lake, and you know how there's the main bathhouses, and then there's a little walkway that goes out to where the boats launch. You remember that spot, Dev? Like there's like where we used to fish when we were kids, like in that little spot.
Yes.
So I was walking from the bathhouse toward that spot. So toward the part of the lake where then you would look across the lake and there would be the edge of the lake, and then a hill that goes pretty much like directly up from there. And that point where I was looking, there aren't campsites right up from there. Now there is a there's like a nature center up there somewhere, but there are no trails that go directly up into the woods over there, because where they would be to the left of my view by, you know, 500 yards or 300 yards. Like, they would go up that way. So I walked out, and I'm not really looking across the lake specifically, but I noticed that there was something like a large person standing on the edge of the water, you know? So without looking directly at them, I noticed there was somebody standing there. So I'm like walking along, and then I look up and I see that person has turned and is walking directly toward the woods and then straight up into the woods. Now, in my memory, what I saw was just like a tall person all in one color, just all in browns.
Right.
But I never looked like clear enough and thorough enough to see what that was, but it was enough of a weird instance. Like, there's no trail there. This person just was standing on the edge of the water and then turned and walked directly to the woods, whatever that would be, like 20 feet, and then straight up into the woods, which goes up into a hill, just right up into the woods, and just walked up without following a trail. Just turn around and walk straight up in the woods. I was like, oh, that was weird. You know, and like I said, I was never really like completely focusing 100% on the person, but I kind of saw them, noticed they were standing there, was doing something, looked back again, saw them turn and walk again, kind of maybe half paying attention to them, and just walk straight up into the woods. And then I realized that it was this thing to just walk straight up into the woods. So who knows, you know? It's far enough away that like I couldn't really tell. Like I said, in my memory, I can just imagine seeing like something like a full grown man all in brown just turn and walk up into the woods. And, you know, I couldn't, you know, and again, in my memory, this is when I was a kid, but in my memory, this person, you know, had like long hair or something. Right. So it's that whole, like that outline of the
Harry,
like, exactly. It's like Harry and the Hendersons. Like, I imagine seeing Harry, like, walk up into the woods. Who knows? But those are my two, like, Bigfoot stories. My two things that like, were a little odd and odd enough that they stuck in my mind, you know, for pretty much the rest of my life. I have like a clear view of both of those events happening. Who knows?
Yeah. Well,
yeah. Campfire stories. You know, what are you going to do? That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, they definitely freaked me out as a kid when you would tell those stories.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So, oh my gosh. If I walk, you know, I walk out to pee, I'm going to get grabbed by.
Yeah, we
Harry's evil brother.
I was telling my students about camping. You know, like I work for Baltimore City Schools, and so I have, you know, these Baltimore City kids, and they're like, camping? We're not going out in the woods. What about the bugs and the bears and the mountain lions? I'm like, you know, like none of that stuff worries me. You know, it's like in the woods at night.
So you say, you know, you live in Baltimore City, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. I don't go there. I'm just like,
what? Yeah, I know what you mean. But
they're like, yeah, we don't go out at night. They're like, we stay inside.
Yeah. Oh, man. No, you got to get out.
Yeah. It's so
much fun.
Got to
get people out, man. It's good for the soul.
Yeah. And there's obviously like, I've quite often I'll also kind of, you know, pull a hippie moment and just kind of walk out into the woods on my own, sometimes at night too when it's dark, and you got to get over that initial fear of the things you can't see, because all of our imaginations are going to go there. But like, once you get over that fear and you realize like you can actually hear like the life of the woods at night, and you see the light from the stars and the moon and just the coolness and the breeze and all the dark rich colors, and it's so nice. Such a nice experience, and the smell of it. You know, I love it. Yeah.
You did used to do that.
Yeah. Derek's taking over that. Yeah, right, exactly.
Where'd Dustin go? I don't know.
He wandered off into the woods barefoot.
He's on a spirit quest, but without the drugs. I don't know what he's doing.
Oh, I love it. You know, I've always loved the woods and just that like peacefulness, you know, going out and just sitting quietly and you see the life happen around you. That's so cool. Like, multiple times in my life, I've kind of just sat down in the woods, and you know, where we live on the East Coast, there's quite a few white-tailed deer, you know, just sit down and you can just see them walking around, and they'll come up kind of close to you and they don't realize you're there because you're just sitting quietly. You see the
squirrels will
come by and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give you that much. After reading like Tom Brown books and stuff, him talking about just sitting there and how things come alive around you. If you just stay quiet for 10 minutes, that is really cool. That's a good suggestion people can do. You don't have to go hiking way out, but even if it's in like some woods behind your yard or something, yeah, even right. that, even that close.
Yep.
If you sit down and lean against a tree for an hour, you'll see some wild stuff.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. My buddy Brian, he started hunting this year, and he said just the stuff he saw sitting up in a tree stand really quietly for 2 or 3 hours was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. He saw like a fox chase a squirrel and almost get it. He saw, you know, squirrels would climb up the tree and be like basically right next to him and then realize he was sitting there and then scurry off. You see like raccoons and obviously the deer, like all the time. Just, he said it was crazy the amount of stuff that he saw just sitting there, you know, and especially those hunting times, right? Like before dawn to right after dawn, and then like before dusk to right after dusk, that transition of light to dark and what happens in that time. Pretty wild. Yeah. There's nothing like it. Camping. Yeah. It's just, you know, and if we get back to the idea of camping and the tools and things, and, you know, a lot of what I do, what I make now has all come from my love of being outside and doing those type of things, axes and knives and bows. And, you know, it's just like a fantasy as a kid, you know, it's like, what did I want to do when I was a kid? I made bows and I made, you know, pocket knives and stuff and, you know, chop down trees and, you know, all those things that I love to do, that kind of Daniel Boone, you know, mentality.
Yeah.
Just like, right. Yeah, just keep on doing it now. And now we get to like do it for real, you know, like make those things and use them for real. And, you know, I'm not camping. I'm not, you know, we talk about bushcraft and things, and it's all just having fun. You know, I'm not surviving. I'm not a frontiersman where my life depends on it. But, you know, if we don't do it, then it's just, why not? You know, it's like, it's something that's interesting to do and people enjoy it and they like to see it and people want to buy that type of stuff because it does give them that feeling of this kind of frontier mentality that there's not around anymore. You know, you have a nice sharp axe and you're cutting wood. There's something super primal about that. And like, yeah, you just feel like a human, you know, I'd say like feel like a man, but I think also like, that same thing, if a woman does it, you get this kind of that natural feel of like what this primal instinct we as humans have to survive and thrive. And, you know, my wife and I love to like go out and search for mushrooms and stuff and forage for plants and learn about edible stuff. And not that we need it, but, you know, we find like morels and chanterelles and Bedells and Falels all over our property. But yeah, it's just
the chanterelles, the temptations.
Yeah, right. The morels. Turkey tail. Yeah, it's fun stuff.
Yeah, you got to get outside. I mean, I have, I guess it's just a new recent. Well, we've been talking about going up to New York for the, what's it called now? Is it the Maker Camp? I was going to say they just had the Hammer In thing. And
yeah, no, the Maker Camp at Blackthorn Resort.
So that, man, that would be great.
Yeah. I think that's definitely on the schedule. Yep.
Yeah, so if anyone listening goes up, and we I'm pretty sure I'll be there, or we'll be there. That, and one day we could do a just everyone, we could rent out a whole circle.
Yeah.
And do our own camping thing. Do our own art of craftsmanship or like makery or something like that, where we can do our own. And I mean, people do that all the time, especially even in Sharondo, they have that top loop.
Right.
That's for groups.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
So you basically have a top loop with a field in the middle to do stuff. And man, how cool would that be to get one of those? And just open it up to anyone who wants to come to the East Coast.
We'll
say, hey, we have 35 campsites.
Right.
We have these reserved for this and this person that we want to come, and then everyone else come on down.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, and you know, with just the intention to hang out for the weekend. You know, like just come and camp. You know, we could bring some asses, bring some knives, and, you know, maybe like whatever, cornhole, and, you know, just like play games and hang out and tell stories and talk and get to know people. And yeah, it'd be awesome. I know that like there's a bunch of guys that do that, like Roy from Vintage Axe Works and Brandon from Whiskey River and Matt from blanking on his name, probably because I've had three beers now within this hour. but Beaver Creek Woodcraft, you know, like those guys, there's a group of them that does that. They go camping together, but that's like a small group of friends, you know, but it would be cool to like do something where we can invite a bunch of people, just like, come on down. Yeah. There's spots open. Yep. Whoever rents it, you know, we're just going to hang out and have fun and camp and, you know, have people chat about their talk about what things you bring with you and, you know, different stuff you like to do and make. And
right. Yeah. And we could set up, it wouldn't even have to be demonstrations. We could just set up events. Some of them could be real events like, hey, we're going to try to make this and that. And some of them would just be dumb. Yeah. Cornhole tournament.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Horseshoes. We're going to play, you know, softball or something.
Who can make like a, you know, a bow drill fire the quickest, you know, try like some of those primitive like skills and stuff.
Have a poker night.
Yeah, right, exactly. I know you, I think you and I have talked about that in the past, like with our brothers, just going out to do like a survival weekend.
You know? Yeah.
Just like bring just the bare minimum and just like try to build shelters and make fire. And if you don't bring the stuff to do all that, then you have to do it. You either have to do it or you, you know, kind of don't have a fire. And we're like, well, let's do it in the summer. So it's not going to kill us, but it'd be fun to, you know, take that stuff out and try to build.
That would be fun. We'll have to look into that. I wonder what some of those campsites, the minimum is. Like, do we have to get 100 guaranteed people?
Right, yeah.
And I bet we could fill it up. That'd be fun.
Yeah, because, I mean, usually those loops, like, you might have a loop that's, you know, 20 sites or something. Or if you have a big camp, yeah, right, a big, like, field or whatever. But we did this past weekend, the place we went to, that was, like, there's a main, it's a really small campground, but there was kind of this main loop of campsites. And then there was this road that kind of went up the hill a little bit, and up on the hill there were woods, and then this kind of short-ish field, maybe 30 or 40 feet wide, that kind of ran along this road. And there were five campsites along this field, you know, so it was like a woods and then a road and then this kind of edge of a field, 30 or 40 feet of field, and then woods behind it. So it was still a kind of woods around us, but there were five campsites along it, and there were five of us that were there. Well, there were four families, and we rented one additional campsite to have as like a home base campsite, so we all like cooked and ate and stuff there. But it was really nice. So we had this whole area in the back that was like away from everyone else, that was just our group of people. So there were no other people back there with us. It was cool. Like, people would like drive by on the loop, and we're like, what are you doing driving back here? You know, like, this is our place.
But looking for firewood.
It was really, yeah, right, exactly. Man, that was tons of firewood. We were not hurting for firewood. Ooh, I guess that makes sense. It's like the first weekend of real camping, you know, for on the East Coast. So there's like tons of wood around. But
that's another pro tip if you're going campsite camping. When you get there, drive the loops. People leave a lot of wood behind.
Yep. Yeah.
And so you'll get half of what you need at least through there.
First, yeah, exactly. And yeah, if you get there, you know, if you're on there on like a transition day, like a Friday or Saturday, or, you know, Sunday when people are transitioning in and out.
Oh yeah.
Then, or, you know, or like what we would do is we would go for a week. So we'd usually go like Sunday to Sunday or something like that. So when we would get there Sunday, most people are there, they're leaving Sunday, and we're arriving at like one. So
by
all
like
the campsites
are
empty. Yeah. But everyone's left the wood they haven't burnt. So
yeah, no one's taking wood home.
I was actually, one of the families, Kate and Sean and their son, Emery and Alistair, they were leaving, and I was standing next to the car, and I was talking to Emery. And he hadn't buckled in his car seat yet. He's five. And I was like, oh, you haven't buckled in yet? He's like, no, Mom said I could like leave my, you know, my buckle unbuckled, because they were just driving down to the bathhouse to go to the bathroom and drop off trash, and then they were going to be leaving. So she said he could leave his, you know, seat unbuckled while they're driving in the campground, because, you know, the speed limit's like five.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I remember that when I was a kid. You know, when we'd get in the campground, after we'd check in, we would drive in, and we would all like sit out on the windows, you know, and like hang out. And I was, and Kate was like, not yet, you know, like, we're not doing that yet. You can be unbuckled. But he was like, can I lean out the window? She was like, we'll roll down the window. How about that? I was like, we were older, buddy. It's okay. You know, I was like, I was older. And when I was your age, I just leaned out the window. And then when we got older, we would sit on the windows. And,
right.
You
know, it's like something excited, that starts at like 10.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we're, you're like, you know, you're driving so slow, you can sit up on the edge of the window, and you're like, woohoo, we're here, we're ready to go camping. It always felt like we drove like, you know, 20 hours to get where we were going, which it was normally usually like three or four.
Right.
We're there sometimes less, but yeah. Yeah, man. So much fun. So recommendations. I know you've already done your recommendation.
Yeah. Ask Iwata.
Ask Iwata and have that down. And my recommendation this week is actually something I've been looking at quite often because I just, you know, recently finished up the Sloyd type carving Puko knife. And I want to do another one. I want to do one with a stacked leather handle. We've done the military knife with stacked leather handle, but that one turned okay. It turned out okay, but it was definitely, I did it in a way that it felt like aged. So it didn't feel like a brand new leather handle. It had a certain like age to it and patina. But I want to kind of, I want to figure out how to do a leather handle that has just that beautiful warm colors of, you know, gold and reddish brown leather. That's really beautiful. And I want to do it for this carving knife. And so I've been looking at different videos on YouTube for people who have done stacked leather handles. And there have been a lot of people. But the one that I found, which is my recommendation this week, is a his channel is called Red Meadow. So Red Meadow Knives. and he has a 5-part series making a stacked leather blocks. So the idea is that he's actually creating a block of stacked leather, which can then be cut down into multiple handle blanks, like through tang handles. And I've seen a bunch of different people do it. Almost every, like what we did was we did epoxy between the layers, and we've kind of did that. What he did was is all about like just water and pressure. So he soaks all the leather, he stacks it all up really cleanly in a bigger block, and then he puts pressure on it in a vise and squeezes it and like dries it as he goes. And when that's dry, it stays together on its own. It's like a solid block of leather. And then because it's a bigger block, then you can cut it down and you don't get any wavy edges because you can cut off all that wave where there's inconsistencies. And so it's a really, really informative series. It's not the most beautifully shot thing ever. You know, it's really just like an informative series. Like, this is the technique that I do, you know, this is the reason why I do it. And but what he comes away with is really beautiful. So check him out, Red Meadow Knives on YouTube. He has a total of 55 subscribers. but what he's doing here is just really beautiful. And I've only watched his stacked leather series. He doesn't do a ton of series. It's just like little kind of clips of knife making and stuff because he's, I think, predominantly a knife maker. But this is a great series. So check it out, Red Meadow Knives on YouTube, and the series is called Making Stacked Leather Blocks, Part 1 through 5.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'm definitely going to use his technique when we're prepping this, so you guys will see me copy his technique on our video. Because I'm going to do exactly what he did, because it looks perfect. It looks beautiful. And that's what I'm going for. Perfect.
Well, we'll shout him out in that, too. Hopefully he gets some love.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's like when you have, with 55 subscribers, you know, it's like, I can tell it's not his goal, right? His goal is not to be a YouTube superstar, and not because he has 55 subscribers, but it's more like the way he's shooting it. You know, his business, he's a knife maker, and he, of course, like anytime you put anything up, it's informative. You hope people watch it and you hope you get some traction, but you know, it might be something where he's put some things up over time because maybe someone encouraged him to do it, or like, you know, maybe he's, The only thing I can think of is when you are, if you want to build subscribers, you can do it, right? It's not super hard. You just, there are some consistency things that you have to do and some things that you need to try to do. You need to put a little bit of extra effort into it, and you can build subscribers. Then obviously once you get momentum, then it's a lot easier, right? Then you have a base of people, your community who are going to watch all the time, and then, you know. And then YouTube recognizes that, and they recommend your stuff more often, and then people can find your name more often. But that first, you know, that first hurdle of the first couple hundred and a couple thousand subscribers, it does feel like it takes some time. But if you do enough, you try enough, then you can get over that hurdle relatively quickly. You know, you have to do something you're passionate about and put a little effort into editing and make sure.
Well, you have to match the quality of the thing you're putting out, like the guy you're recommending, you have to just bring that level up because the medium is video.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That's what it is. So if you're trying to present something in that medium, you just got to step that up just a little bit. There's a few things, but, you know, right. If he's got good stuff, it'll, yeah, he'll do well. He doesn't have to do much.
Right, yeah. I mean, you know, and this video is, he put it out a year ago. It has 221 views. And he has stuff from, and he's not putting out super consistent, but he has a video from a month ago and another one from a month ago that's only 16 seconds. 2 months ago, 2 months ago, 14, 4 months ago, 4 months ago. So he's putting a few things out, you know, here and there. But yeah, you know, hopefully go check him out. Give him some love. Check out that video. Check out some of his other stuff. If you're interested in knife making, it's just another person in the community, someone who can hopefully influence and inspire. And, you know, we can all work together to grow.
And I'll say his 250 views probably does more because he's selling something than if we have a video that has 100,000 views.
Right, exactly.
All he needs is a few people from that to buy something from him, and he's probably doubled the amount of money we've made off of our 100,000
right. Yeah, exactly.
View video. So I don't know. He might be doing it right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, that's another thing too. If you have a business and you have, you know, if your business is your main focus, then YouTube can only help you with your business, right?
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
So, like, why not shoot a couple of videos on something that you're passionate about doing and putting online? Because at least it's a venue for you now to get views on it. You know, someone's mm-hmm. going to search your tag, and they're going to want to see something that you make or that you do or your whatever your thing is. There are people out there who want it, so they're going to find it, and then they're going to reach out to you, because if you don't put it there, then they're going to find someone else.
Right.
So, yeah. So if you have something to sell and you're making things, then put some YouTube videos up. Like, why not? It's free advertisement. It doesn't cost anything to do it, you know, which is nice.
What was his name again?
Red Meadow Knives.
Good deal.
On YouTube. Yep. All right. Anything else, Dev?
That's it. I'm good.
Yeah, that was good. That was fun. You know, you recommended talking about camping, and I think we were kind of all over the place with what we talked about, but that's okay. It's fun. You
it's know. Yeah, half Japanese business talk, half camping.
All yeah, right. Yeah. What are you gonna do? All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for listening. It's been a blast. We're super happy to be bringing you a podcast each week, and we're going to keep on doing it. If you want to support the channel and the podcast, you can always go over and check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/theartofcraftsmanship, which I will put in the show notes. You can follow along with what we do on Instagram at @theartofcraftsmanship and @theartofcameraguy. And always go check out our videos, which is why we do all this, because we love putting out the videos and we want lots more people to watch. And go check us out on YouTube. All right. Thank you guys all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.